I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Suzanne from San Diego.
My name's Suzanne, and I'm an alcoholic. Holy cow. Okay, is that okay? I'd like to thank Larry for ambushing me. Thank you very much for asking me. It's an honor and a privilege to participate in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been sober for about 7.5 years. I have a sobriety date. I have a home group. We meet on Thursday nights in La Mesa. It's a step in traditional workshop. I have a sponsor. Did I say that already? I have a sponsor. And like everybody says, those are things that were not important to me when I got here. And when I got here, I didn't know if I wanted to be sober or not this time. This is not my first sobriety date. I don't even think it's my second sobriety date. So if you're new again, don't worry. You can keep coming back. We'll invite you. So, my task tonight is to just tell you what it was like, what I was like, what happened, and how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and what I'm like today. And if you don't hear anything, I hope that you hear that Alcoholics Anonymous works and that there is hope in these rooms. Because a person who drank like me and did the things that I did while drinking doesn't deserve what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. I truly believe that in my heart. And so just remember that part. It works. And I'm proof, and you're all proof. So my sponsor said I should start when I was born. Just kidding. Back in 1970, no. It would be easy to kill time, though, wouldn't it? I was a weird kid like Sammy. You know, thank you, Sammy, for doing 10 minutes. I kind of felt a little awkward, too. It's true. Not that you're weird. We're all a little weird. I felt a little maladjusted, and my childhood was chaotic and strange, and I had parents who drank to solve their problems. I don't know if they're alcoholic, but they drank a lot, and that was part of my upbringing. I moved back and forth, and they were giving me geographics before I even knew what that, before I had my first drink, I was being moved around a lot to see what would work the best. Thankfully, I ended up in a small town with my dad, and we kind of raced each other home at night. The bars close at 2, so I just need to be home at 1:45. And I really liked what Sammy said about being a weekend warrior. That as soon as I learned to drink and figured it out, I was a weekend warrior, for a long time. And I can remember my first drunk pretty clearly, too. It sort of was a pattern that started to repeat itself over and over again. This kid named Dusty Demert and my stepsister at the time, we decided that we would drink because his grandma had a cart of alcohol, and she had, one of everything, it seemed like. It's like one of those little tea carts. And we decided that we were going to take one drink of everything. How fun. And the pattern that started is that we all took a drink of everything, and I was not finished. They wanted to go hang out at the park, and I think I was in sixth grade or something, so I don't know how old that made me, maybe 11, 12. I don't know, I have a 10-year-old daughter, and that scared me, what you said, Sammy, about being 10. So that's what we did, and I wasn't finished, so I had to have a few more before we went to the park, and I had so much fun. I don't remember much of it. I know I woke up the next morning with a bruised elbow, which hurts really bad if you've ever had one. And I was sick, very sick, laying on the bathroom floor, had to go to school the next day, and I couldn't wait to do it again. I dragged myself out of bed, I went to school, sick all day, and I just couldn't wait. And alcohol did that thing that it does for a lot of us. It just made me feel normal, I just want to be like you. And alcohol certainly did that for me for a long time. And, like any sixth grader, I couldn't get drunk all the time, so I just drank when we could and continued on through high school. And I really, was delusional. I thought everybody drank like me. And I grew up in a small town, like I said, and we did a lot of canyon parties, a lot of keg parties. And I really thought I was just like everybody else, What was different was that when everyone else was finished and done, I wasn't done, The party was still going for a long time. And early in my drinking career, I also Oh, maybe I shouldn't say that. It's not really appropriate. Looking at my sponsor, she was like, I'm a different person today. Early in my drinking career, I liked to hang out with a lot of boys, too. And those boys that I hung out with, they were already telling me in 10th grade, you don't drink like a normal person, you know. And it started then. Like, my managing and controlling started because we would go out to Canyon parties, and I would drink my Coke, and I would fill it up with beer so that no one knew I was drinking, because I don't want him to know. And, you know, he's the problem because he's, like, just a total fuddy-duddy. And, you know, here I am. I'm like, I don't know, I was probably 15 years old, and I'm already hiding my drinking from someone. And that's kind of how my drinking went all along. You know, I moved out of that town, and I came to San Diego, and it was going to be different when I got here. I wasn't going to do that. And I was here probably about 6 months, and a friend from Idaho called me up. She had joined the Navy, and here she was, and we were off, you know, to Tijuana. And that's where I did a lot of my drinking because I didn't have a fake ID yet. And quickly we made friends with some of her military friends, and I got my fake ID, and it was on. You know, we went to the bars, we went to the clubs, and it was so much fun until it wasn't fun anymore, you know. And once again, I'm drinking out of control, and I don't realize that I know now is that I have awoken this allergy in myself that I cannot stop, you know, when I want to. And there were many times that I thought, you know, like, that guy's really cute. You know, if I can just stay sober a little longer, you know, maybe I'll get his number. That was kind of my drinking career. It's really, and now I look back and I'm like, oh God, what a, you know what? That's what I was, because alcohol release made me feel normal. Now, I wasn't behaving normally, obviously. It was going out drinking and having fun. So my first trip to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I think I was 20, and I was drinking with friends, and I had pre-partied and post-partied, and I had just dropped a friend off, and was reaching down to grab, I think it was like a Metallica tape or something off the floor, and I hit a parked RV. Hard, like the RV corner was in my passenger seat, and I really look at that like my higher power was there, because I had just dropped my friend off. She would have been dead for sure. And so that started my first exposure to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I had, you know, court slip. I came in on a court slip, and I went to meetings on my rollerblades because I couldn't drive, had no car and no license. And, you know, what I remember about that was that they were all old men, and it was really dreary. You know, I thought, I do not want that life. So I just got my slip signed, and I quickly found meetings that I could get my slip signed first and not after the meeting, so I wouldn't have to stick around. And that was just kind of my first foray, and I was pretty sure I didn't belong in Alcoholics Anonymous. I can tell you that in high school, I knew I was not really a normal drinker. I knew that other people didn't drink like me. But my dad and my mom were alcoholics, and I'm not like that at all. But by that time, I knew that my drinking was unusual, but I wasn't ready to stop, you know, because it really worked for me. I needed it. I was a very uncomfortable person. I'm sure you guys can relate to that. Pretty much consistently uncomfortable, and I needed alcohol to be friendly. I needed alcohol to drive. You know, I love to drink and drive. That's part of my story. When I got my license back, obviously, I quickly started drinking and driving again. And, you know, I had lots of little close calls. And I started a career. I started working. And that really, for me, made me feel like I was okay. I had a job. I could show up. People liked my work. And then I would get off and run across the street to Kelly's Pub, which is on El Cajon Boulevard. So awesome. And I love hole-in-the-wall bars. Those are my kind of bars. You know, the dancing and the clubbing is okay, but if you're a drunk like me, you quickly get very clumsy and you're not graceful. You know, I have a friend in Alcoholics Anonymous who she says that drinking gave her the errs, you know, like prettier, taller, smarter, you know, better dancer. It didn't really do that for me, but I thought it did. And then quickly, like, I would come home with bruises and bumps. I didn't know how I got them. I went out with a friend who was non-alcoholic, a good friend, and somebody had roofied my drink. And either that or I drank too much. No, she thought someone roofied my drink. I think I drank too much. She just could not see, how did you get so drunk? Like, that's crazy. Those guys were going to take you home. I'm like, yes, they were. You fucked it up for me. All right. Excuse me. Classy. But that's the kind of drinker that I was. I didn't know this at the time, but I had no self-worth. You know, I was zero until I put that alcohol in my body. And that thing takes over, you know, that alcohol works for me. And what I didn't know, like I said earlier, is that I was setting off that phenomenon of craving. I was not a daily drinker. I was a weekend warrior. And then that became like, oh, Wednesday's college night, you know. Anything I could find, any excuse to drink, that's kind of what I looked for. And I think Sammy talked a little bit about it, too. All I had to do was think about the fact that I was going to drink later. And that took the edge off my uncomfortableness. Is that a word? I don't know. Just thinking about the fact that I could drink in, you know, half an hour or this weekend, that was enough to take a little bit of my discomfort off. And let's see, speed ahead. I decided that, you know, the solution is to have a baby because that's going to settle me down. So I met someone, I moved in, we had this child, and it was going to be different, you know. It was going to be different. First, it was going to be different because he let me move in with them. And then it was going to be different because I was going to have his baby, you know. I'm going to be classy now. I'm going to be different. And it wasn't different. You know, I was pregnant with that child, and I drank near beer, or I don't remember, it had a green label, but it's non-alcoholic beer. Oh, Duels, yeah, that was it. Tastes like crap. But it was enough so that I could feel like I was drinking, and then I quickly, because I'm so smart, like all of us alcoholics, we're very keen. If I have O'Doul's in the fridge, and I get a real six-pack, and I just hide that, he'll never know because I smell like I'm drinking beer, right? Like Bob, you know, same thing. Oh, you know, you can't smell it, so I'll just go ahead and drink the real stuff. I didn't know at the time that I was fighting this, like, tight, coiled spring inside me. I was so uncomfortable. I had everything that I thought I wanted at the time. I had a man. I had a house. I had a baby in my tummy. It was going to be different. It was going to be really different. It was going to be good. And I drank a little bit through my pregnancy, not a lot, but just enough to take the edge off. And that baby was born, and within 2 months, I was going crazy because I wasn't drinking. I was breastfeeding. You can't drink and breastfeed, right? Sure you can. It's called the pump and dump. After about 2 months, I realized that's what I was going to have. I had to do it. So I had crossed that invisible line that we cross where we cannot not drink anymore. And this person that I was with, this man, he's non-alcoholic, and he would say, before I got pregnant, he would say, hey, you know what, I feel like we've been partying too much. Let's not drink for 30 days. That sounds great, right? I'm like, no! Who does that? Why do you want to do that? And I would say, instead of saying that, I'm like, okay, that sounds like a great idea. Because I can't tell the truth already about my drinking. And so he went the full 30 days, and I just spent less time with him. You know, that's how I managed that. And he was very confused, you know, because non-alcoholics have a really hard time understanding alcoholism. And I didn't even know at that point that that's what I was suffering from. So that first child was born, and about 2 months into it, I started drinking heavily. I decided to quit breastfeeding because I started feeling a little bit guilty. And I was walking that baby around in my in her little cute sling with vodka in one of those little bottles that you put breast milk in, you know, and I look back now and I think, what if I had poured some formula into that and given that to her? You know, the grace of God saved my children for sure and saved me. But that's where I was. And my husband and his mother, my mother-in-law, did an intervention on me. And I'll never forget it. You know, they sentenced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, they said, you know, you need to take care of your drinking. We want to send you away somewhere. And I just, no way. I don't want to be away from my baby that I care so much about that I'm mistreating. So I went to AA, and I gave it a shot. You know, I drank in the parking lot before the meeting. And I just lied a lot. You know, I had to lie about everything. And that has taken me a long time in sobriety to figure out how to really tell the truth about everything. And that's the honest truth. So I tried sobriety. I had a woman, I cried all the time. So my view of AA this time was that everybody seemed like they had it together. But I was crying all the time. I was always like almost there, you know, and this woman gave me her phone number. And her name is Margaret, and she's still sober today. And she tried really hard to help me. You know, she did not chase me. She invited me to her house. She invited me to read the book. And I declined most of the time because I was really busy. I remember I was painting the cabinets. I was painting the kitchen cabinets because that was my primary purpose at that time. Because I was going to, you know, it's like we fix the outside. You know, I'm going to change this house. It's all going to be good. I've got this baby. I've got this house, this man. I don't like it. I got to paint everything. And that was my solution instead of going to meetings and trying Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I really, at that point, wasn't ready to get sober. I wanted to drink. And so after about 6 months, you know, I really did plan my drinking. I was ready. 6 months is enough, and I really wasn't sober the whole time, but he thought I was, so that counts, right? No, doesn't count. And I started planning it, and I thought it was some surprise party for somebody, or 40th birthday, and I thought, I'm going to drink. I'm going to drink at that party, and I'm just going to tell him, and it's going to be over, and we'll be able to drink like normal people again. And that's what I did. And he was disappointed, but he didn't understand alcoholism. He said, yeah, you know, you haven't drank for a long time, and you've been going to those meetings. And by the end of the 6 months, I wasn't going to those meetings. I was just going and having some alone time away from the baby. And so we've got wine back on the table. You know, quickly we have wine with dinner. And problem with that is one glass of wine is not enough for somebody like me. It definitely wasn't. I needed more. And so my solution was to double buy. You know, I double bought at the store, double or triple. So whatever we're drinking that night, I get two more bottles and I hide them under the bathroom counter. And you're laughing because you know you've done it. Going to AA, that last time I had heard a lot of stories like that, and I thought, oh, that's smart. You know, people would say, oh, I hit alcohol in the garden hose. Oh, that's smart, you know. I hope it never comes to that, but I can do that. So I started hiding the alcohol and figuring out ways to not smell. But the truth is, you know, who am I hiding it from? You know, I'm hiding it from myself because I don't want to see that I have this problem, this thing that works for me, this solution that I know I cannot do forever. So we start drinking again, and I start drinking during bath time because I'm the one who does the baths with the door locked. And my husband can't understand how I get so drunk on one glass of wine. It's like the magic glass, you know, it just keeps filling itself up. Poor guy. So fast forward a little bit, you know, I became really irritable and discontented because I had to hide my drinking and I couldn't drink as much as I wanted to. And I didn't know that at the time. Looking back, I was really like trying hard to be good. You know, I just wanted to be good and not drink and exercise and read spiritual books, you know, all that list that was read earlier. I tried almost everything on that list. I didn't know that I was trying to manage and control it. I have like The Road Less Traveled. It's a great book. I have, you know, all these books, The Dummy's Guide to Buddhism, because I want the shortcut, you know, all this whole bookshelf of things that, because I knew that there was something wrong in here. Like, this is not normal, this way that I am. But I wasn't ready to give up the alcohol. And So I started getting really irritable and discontented, and I started an affair with someone because he understood me. You know, and the book talks about this. I think it's in the family afterward, isn't it? You know, I found counsel in a person that understood me. And translation is that he stocked his fridge with plenty of drinks that I liked, you know, and he had no problem at all with me drinking. So I have this young child. I have this, actually, we weren't even married. We hadn't gotten married, and I was pissed about that. Why wouldn't you marry me? I'm just a drunk, you know. So we weren't married, and I was running around on him and working, and, you know, the jig was up. I got busted. I got found out. So I did like any good alcoholic does. I moved out, quit my job, and just let it all go, you know. And at that point, I remember thinking, I really love her. My little girl, she was about two and a half. I really love her, but, you know, God just wants me to be happy, you know. And I had so much delusion going on that I really thought that that was true. And I had no connection whatsoever with the higher power, any kind of spiritual. I had the books. But I didn't have it. And that's where my drinking took me, to some really ugly places. And so that's what happened. And it was, my sobriety date is October 29th, 2006. So it was close to Halloween. And my little two-year-old wanted to go to a Halloween carnival. I cry every time. I'm going to not cry this time. She had her Cinderella costume on. She's a little blondie, so cute. Really wanted to go to this. And I was going to meet neighbors, old neighbors, because I didn't live there. It's been like a week, seriously. And I had moved in with this person, and we didn't make it to the carnival. You know, I drove around, and as I told you, my car was my bar. So I drank, and she played in the back seat, and we went, we're just going to go stop home, and mommy's going to get, you know, some makeup on, and that's the last thing I remember. And we never made it to the carnival, and I woke up completely crushed, you know, like, this is it. It's up. I woke up and I found her sleeping on, you know, between a bunch of piles of moving boxes in her little Cinderella costume. You know, and she had been crying. There's like tear streaks all over her face. God darn it. That was it. You know, it was like, oh my God, this is me. I'm my mom. You know, I never thought it would be like my mother. And, I drank again, you know. I couldn't stop, you know. So I sent her back to her dad's, and he came and picked her up. And the neighbors that I was going to meet called him, like, something's wrong. She's talking really funny on the phone, and you need to go get your kids. So he came and picked her up, and it took about a good solid week for me to really quit drinking. And by that time, I was drinking in the morning. I was drinking whenever I could. I like to puke and drink so I can drink more. Not puke and speak, though. I know you want me to. And I had, you know, I had a moment of clarity. I woke up in the morning, and this gentleman that I was living with was pouring alcohol into my coffee cup. And that was it. Bam. You know, it's like 7 o'clock in the morning. I have no job. I have no family. I'm effed. You know, like, this is my life. This is it. And that was my moment of clarity. And that morning, I went and saw my husband, well, now husband, and he said, you know, you need to get sober, and you know what to do. And I'm like, what? You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, here I come. And that morning, I went to a meeting that I still attend today. It's in Lake Murray. It's a women's meeting, and that's the meeting that I met my sponsor at. And I, like I said, I wasn't really sure that I wanted to get sober. I was to save my daughter, and by that time, I hated this man, you know, because it's all his fault. So I wasn't sure that I wanted to keep that relationship, but I knew that I wanted what was mine. You know, she was mine. Hate saying that, but that's where I was. And I was going to stay sober to show you. And that first night, he wouldn't let me back in the house. So I stayed in a hotel for about 3 nights, and every single night I went to a meeting, and every single night I went to the AM/PM on the corner, and I, like, inside my brain screaming, don't do it, don't drink, and I had to drink. So I would get a six-pack, walk to the hotel, drink that, walk back, and get another one, and I did that continuously for 3 days until I didn't do it anymore. And I don't know what it was different, but that woman that I asked to be my sponsor started taking me through the steps. How are we doing? Oh, boy, geez, Louise, you're supposed to do the signal. Okay, that's the get sober signal. You know, alcohol, everyone has a different bottom, you know. And you hear a lot about high bottoms, low bottoms, whatever. I know my bottom was just that I couldn't do it anymore, and I felt disgusting inside. I felt like, you know, this is not the person that I want to be, and I don't want to rely on alcohol to make me feel good. And quickly my journey began in Alcoholics Anonymous. If I knew now what she was then, I probably wouldn't have asked her, but she was a very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. She made me make friends with like 10 women I think she was sponsoring at the time, and I say that in jest because, you know, she just made us meet together, and she started me on the steps because I had been to Alcoholics Anonymous before. She didn't mess around with me. She said, call me every morning. I think it was 7:30 at the time, and that was really too early for me. So I would call her late, and she would say, okay, we'll start over tomorrow. I'm like, what is that? And what she explained to me is that she was trying to help me achieve discipline, self-discipline, because we are undisciplined as alcoholics. And so I called her every morning. We met and read the book, quickly went through the first few steps, and she started me on that inventory, and that was a big deal. That was a big deal for me to be able to, a victim like myself, to be able to look at all these things that had happened to me and see my part. See what I had done to set the ball in motion to be harmed. And I cried a lot. I don't know if you guys cried when you were new, but I cried a lot because it was like, oh, my God, this is me? You know, and the obsession to drink was removed fairly quickly. I just got really busy. I went to a meeting every day for 90 days, and that sponsor of mine hooked me up with another woman who she also sponsored, and she was doing 90 meetings in 90 days. And I thought that my sponsor, Joy, had, like, put her on me to make sure I was going to meetings, like she was watching me. You know, you got to have somebody make sure you're going to meetings, because I didn't like to go to meetings. It's not the truth, but we went to meetings together for 90 days. She's probably my closest person. She is my person, and today she's my sponsor. Within about 90 days of sobriety, someone asked me to help them read the book, and I didn't think I could do it because I didn't have any experience. And my sponsor said, yes, you can. You know, you just need to stay ahead of her in the steps. And that was really good. I just felt so good. It felt really good to, I don't know how to explain it. It felt really good to be selfless. And I was a very selfish and self-centered person. It's been my experience. If you want to stay in AA, you have to really work on that self-centeredness, and it doesn't go away. Mine has not, but working with others is the bright spot of my life, for sure. And I have a pretty good life today. I have a pretty busy life, but certainly helping other people in this program is immunity. And the book says it over and over again, you know, in various forms. You know, if I want immunity from drinking, I got to help other people. I have to give away this message that I have. And this message to me is that we can stay sober, you know, that we don't have to drink. And somebody said that to me early in sobriety. She said, you know, you don't have to drink like that, and you don't have to live like that anymore if you don't want to. And I thought, whatever. And I say that to people all the time. I say that to total strangers, like, you know, you don't have to live that way. And how do I know? Because that's what I do, you know. And that first sponsor, she really taught me to do the footwork even when I didn't want to. And very frequently I didn't want to go to meetings. I didn't want to give anyone my phone number. Ugh, you know, but those are the little things that she taught me in Alcoholics Anonymous that are a big part of my sobriety today. I have I'm very fortunate, you know, I'm very grateful to have a network of women around me that understand me, that call me on my crap, you know, that when I'm delusional, which I am frequently, unfortunately. I have other friends outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll call them when I want to do something I shouldn't do. like, can you believe it? He's such a jerk. They'll go, yeah. And they co-sign. And so I don't call them very often. I still call them once in a while. But I have that first sponsor really, really, really did that the fellowship is a big part of this program. And if you're not part of the fellowship, I highly recommend that you get connected, even if it's just with one person, you know, a sponsor and some friends that you can complain about your sponsor to. Because at times when I wanted to quit AA and I thought, you know what, I have this. I'm just not going to drink, and I'm going to go live my life because it's really busy, and I don't need to go to meetings and hang out with those people anymore. And those have been pretty dark spots in my sobriety. And somebody will call me. You know, I don't believe in coincidences anymore. I had a friend who's really going through a super rough time right now, and I was doing my prayer and meditation in the morning, and, you know, a thought popped into my head, call this person. And that's never happened to me before. And I called her, and she needed me. You know, it was like, whoa, that's what my sponsor's talking about. So in working the steps, I do believe that the steps are designed to not only keep you from drinking, but to help you find that higher power of your choosing. And that's been a really important part of my sobriety. And I can tell you that for the first couple of years, it was like, yeah. You know, I got it. It's cool. No problem. I got a HP. Woo, got it. But I quickly realized, probably at about 2 or 3 years, that I really needed to get serious about having a connection with the higher power. And I have heard this analogy that I love so much. It's about the refrigerator, you know, that when we come into AA, there's this refrigerator full of spoiled food. And, you know, when we do the inventory process and the amends, we have to clean it out. But in order for it to work, we have to stay plugged in. It's got to stay plugged in, and you have to clean it constantly. And that's an analogy for me about spirituality and about this program. If I don't keep doing my 10th step, you know, if I don't continue to take personal inventory and right my wrongs, you know, that refrigerator is going to come unplugged. And so I have to keep it plugged in by tapping into my higher power. And that has certainly been interesting. And I've learned a lot from you guys when you talk at the podium about your higher power. And I love that big loophole of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. We're not any denomination. We're just drunks who want to stay sober and get connected to a higher power. I love the amends step. If you haven't done that, I highly recommend it. Amends is where, when I did the amends with my first sponsor, there were a lot that I didn't want to do, and she had me do those first. You know, the ones I wanted to do were all the men, you know. I have all these guys that I have wronged, and I need to go make amends to them. Did I mention that I lie and I'm sneaky? But she knew me because she was just like me, you know. She was just like me, and she had my number. And she said, you know what, put those aside. She was really nice that time. Put those aside, and let's start on your family. Start on your family. And I started to do that. And what the craziest thing happened, all that, like, self-worth, that lack of self-worth started to go away. And I could, you know, walk around with my head held high. I can go to Costco and not worry that I'm going to run into somebody and have to turn that big old cart around, you know, in the middle of the aisle, because that happened to me. And in fact, let's see, I've been sober about 7.5 years and went to a speaker workshop, and the speaker said something that really got me thinking, and he was talking about sinning in private, you know, about how as alcoholics, we can't let our character defects take over, and we cannot sin in secret, you know, because that's going to get you in trouble. And I've heard that, like, you're sick as your secrets, but I've told all my secrets, you know, to my sponsor. But something came up for me, and it was an amends that I had not made and that I lied about to my sponsor, and it was a financial amends. And I'm thinking, God, I've been sober a long time, right? That's the one half of my brain. The other half is like, I'm not sober long enough. And it was a pretty hefty financial amount that I needed to pay back. And I couldn't stop thinking about it. You know, talk about an obsession of the mind. So I told my sponsor what I had done. And she's like, oh, okay, just pay the money back, you know. No big deal. I'm like, okay, I'll start saving money. And I had a really good week at work. And guess what? I had all the money like that. No coincidences. So I called this woman and I met with her and I was able to make this amends well into my sobriety. And she was just like, oh, thanks for my money. It's like, what? No applause? No. But my money. It's not my money. It's her money, right? And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous taught me. You know, when I have a credit card bill, it's not my money that I'm paying. It's their money. I spent the money, you know, amends people that I've stolen from. She loaned me money. She loaned me money to bail my car out because I had it repossessed for not paying my bills out of the kindness of her heart. She never called me once, and it's been 10, 15 years ago since she loaned me that money. Nicest person ever. She loved to have her money back. And she just said, keep doing what you're doing, you know. And thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous, I can swallow my pride, which is a big character defect, because I want to look good at all costs. And I didn't want to look bad in front of her. And she texted me a few days later and said, you know, I know that was really hard for you, and I'm really happy for you. Thanks for my money. It's like, you got it. So really quickly, you know, that sponsor that I had left. She left. She abandoned me. No, she left. She was having a really hard time, and she sponsored a lot of women, and she left us. And that's how I felt at the time. And thank God that she had that connection, that web of women, so that we could help each other and be there. And most of us are still around and still sober. And, you know, that person that was with me for 90 days, she's now my sponsor today. She knows everything about me, and she sponsors me. She's my friend. And I remember when I was sponsored by Joy, I didn't feel like I could be, you know, there's got to be an authority figure. There's got to be a separation. not true. You know, it's not true at all. And what I realized with Joy leaving, my sponsor leaving, is that no human power can relieve me of my alcoholism. You know, and what that means to me is that my sponsor, my husband, by the way, we got married, you know, I decided to keep him, or I should say he decided to keep me. But he can't keep me sober, you know. She can't keep me sober. You can't keep me sober. It has to be my connection with a higher power. And the truth is that I don't know what part of my program works to keep me sober, so I just keep doing it all, even when it feels like it's just too much, you know. I just keep doing it. I keep going to meetings. I have regular meetings that I have commitments at. I have a sponsor. I sponsor women. I help women. I answer the phone most of the time. You know, I do the deal, and I feel like I have been overpaid in Alcoholics Anonymous. I still have that. Well, she's not 2.5 anymore. She's 10. And in early sobriety, it wasn't exciting enough, so I had another one. So I have two children. We're married today, and, you know, things are what they are, you know. I'm not going to stand here and tell you that life is grand and wonderful every day, because it's not, you know, but it's way better than what I had before. And I don't think about drinking a whole lot. It definitely comes to mind once in a while, but quickly, it's not a good idea. You know, I don't want to drink because I don't want what I had before, that's for sure. Because now I can look at it with a new pair of glasses. Love that book. I can look at it with clear lens, you know. I thought I had it all going on, and I looked good, you know, and I was stumbling around and drinking and sleeping with your boyfriend, and that's not the person that I want to be. You know, I want to be me today, and that's unusual for me. And I think as alcoholics, I have to fight my natural tendencies on a regular basis. You know, my character defects, that strange mental twist that tells me it's going to be different this time. You know, it's not just about alcohol, it's about my behavior. You know, if I just do this differently this way, things will work out for me. I have to fight that every day. We have to fight our natural whatever being that we are, and continuing to do the steps and surround myself with you guys is how I do that. And I hope that you heard something. I hope that you know that AA works, because if it worked for a person like me, it can work for you too. If you're new or on the fence, AA is definitely different than what it was before, but it's a good life. So thank you for inviting me. Thanks.
Thank you, Suzanne. Let's thank Suzanne and Sammy once more.